Hi, everybody. I'm Becky Morgan, and welcome to the Equalizer podcast. I'm hosting this week with Taylor Vincent, and we're here to talk about the wrap-up of the World Cup. We just finished watching Spain beat England 1-0 for the final and become the new world champions. And this is a pretty historic win in a few ways, because now Spain is the first team to ever hold the under 17, under 20, and senior world titles at the same time. They're also only the fifth winner in 9 editions of the Women's World Cup, and they've joined Germany as one of only 2 nations to win both the men's and women's titles. So that's pretty cool. And of course, this is a win that is not without its controversies due to Spain's battles with their federation. But before we get into all of that, Taylor, how are you doing? What were your impressions of this game?
I really think it comes down to, right, Spain has been peaked at the right time, right? They kind of had a rough go with it through group stage, a really tough loss against Japan, but really they came out and England did not have a real response to their press, and Spain came away with the win.
I think you're 100% right. You know, so much of the key to success in winning tournaments like this is, as you said, about peaking at the right time. And Spain was absolutely able to do that and really grow into the tournament. And it seemed like they had the upper hand through this entire match. As you said, England just did not have an answer for their pressing. And as a result, Spain was able to walk away with the victory. But even before we get into this and talk about this game in any more depth, let's talk a little bit about the game for third place, which is Australia versus Sweden. So Sweden won, obviously, took home the bronze for the second World Cup in a row, but they also kind of ended Australia's Cinderella story a little bit. So what are your impressions on that match?
I mean, from my point of view, Australia just kind of looked gassed, right? Both teams came out the same starting 11 that they had in the semis. But if we look back on Sweden's progression through the tournament, they had a lot more rotation within their starting 11. Like, I think it was their second group stage. They had only 2 starters from the game before. And, right, they just really, really made it a team effort, made sure that the loads were being evenly distributed. Whereas I think Australia was in a very different situation where they were not rotating. Every game was a must win because of how things kind of played out in group. And I think all of the games and all of the running finally just kind of caught up to them.
Sure. And the point you make, Sweden was able to do a lot of rotation based on tactics and strategy, where Australia was forced to do rotation based on injury and trying to fill gaps. And I think that that is ultimately what did Australia in the end, to some extent. But still, super proud of them making it as far as they did. I think they had a very good showing in the tournament, and they were definitely such an exciting team to watch, and they definitely rallied all of Australia around them. So, you know, overall, I think this was just great for the growth of the women's game in general.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw something that was like half of Australia was watching the semifinal game, which is probably, I don't know what the other half were doing.
No, and that was only, I think, on like one feed or one channel. So when they did
all the people in bars and
yeah. So, I mean, just think about that. Like you said, you know, there's 50, 100 people at watch parties or more in bars. You know, that's thousands more people. Plus, like, that didn't even count in people that were streaming it, you know, from other venues. So that is just absolutely a phenomenal number of people, and I think they've really solidified, you know, these Australian players as national stars that they should be and household names now. So
not to even get off topic a little bit, but I did see that there's actually even a little bit of controversy in Australia, because the people who got the rights to show the World Cup got it for so cheap. I think it was like $5 million.
Oh my goodness.
And right, that's such a giant return that they got
yeah.
Coming off of it was just like, this is an investment, right? Women's sports is not just, we do it because the good old, we have daughters, quote. But, right, you can make your money back, right? There's money to be had here.
And that is something that, you know, FIFA has said, you know, they've said that, you know, as much crap as we give them, that like, yeah, you know, if people aren't willing to buy the broadcast rights for a decent amount of money, that does affect how much money we return in. And I mean, I do think that is like one of the few fair points that FIFA has made, that like, yeah, I mean, for all these companies and all these people out there who are saying like, yeah, we need to value women's sports more, and then you refuse to pay more than like bottom dollar for the broadcast rights. I don't know. Hopefully that this just means that in 4 years, or even for the Olympics, if it's not already set, it probably is, you know, the price and the value is just going to vastly increase, and investment is only going to grow as the result of this. So, I mean, I think this tournament has been a huge success for Australia as a whole. Are they going to be disappointed they didn't come back with a medal and of course not winning the whole thing? Of course, that would have been absolutely
fairy
amazing.
Tale ending.
Like, I mean, beyond, like, I mean, you can barely even write it and have it be believable as a fairy tale, but they have a lot to be proud of. And I think that they have a lot of incredibly young players that they can still build around and are going to look even better 4 years from now.
Yeah. And I mean, right, they have the Olympics to look forward to as well.
That's
next
true.
Year.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think that they're set to have a good showing in that as well. If they can just get some players a little healthier and in a little better shape than maybe they were, you know, as unfortunately as things were for this tournament. So let's then jump into the big game with Spain versus England. And you said it earlier. I mean, Spain just really posed problems that England had a lot of trouble answering. And particularly in the first half, I don't know how well the three back worked for England. Spain seemed to be able to just kind of run rampant all over that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the goal that ultimately ended up being the game winner?
Yeah, I think, right, it all came off of Lucy Bronze getting dispossessed, but it's more of not that she got dispossessed, but it's where she got dispossessed, I think, right? Because Bronze was playing that outside position in their four mids, right? And I'm assuming that she was taking the responsibility of still protecting that sideline, right? Because normally Bronze is a phenomenal outside back. But on this certain play, they basically gave her a clear cut to go straight towards the middle of the field. And then she took it, right? And then so when she was depossessed, basically, no one was in the right position to defend a counter at that point.
On the flank, yeah.
Correct. And I think that's kind of where they had gotten into trouble, right? Because the defense was no longer in a proper shape to defend.
Yeah, I mean, Spain absolutely killed them in transition there. And I mean, kudos to Alicia Russo, though, for doing everything she could to get back and cover
that
gap.
She booked it.
She did book it, and she didn't quite get there in time, but I mean, she put every effort into it and really did everything she could. But I mean, also kudos to Olga Carmona, who scored back-to-back game winners for Spain in their last two matches, and, you know, really just put in a rifled shot that, you know, Earps couldn't stop into the side netting. So, you know, that was a great goal from Spain, but really just, I know that England are going to be kicking themselves over that. And then once they made the formation change at halftime, I do think that England looked more solid and they did take more possession in the game. I believe in the first half, it was something like England was in the 30s and Spain was significantly higher. And then it ended with 58-42. So like a little better. I think England played themselves back into the game more significantly. But I mean, I think the big moment of the second half was without a doubt the called PK. And then Hermosa steps up to take it. And it wasn't the best taken PK, but I mean, Mary Earps.
She had it covered all the way to the post.
Oh, she read it. She read it before I think Hermosa even knew exactly what she was going to do. She had that covered. And I mean, this really was an exceptional performance by Earps. I mean, it's disappointing. Throughout the entire match. I mean, she really truly did a remarkable job. She had that earlier save I cannot remember who took the shot, but much earlier in the first half.
I think she had three saves in the match outside of the PK.
But she had that wonderful save where she managed to just barely get her hand out
Oh,
and
yeah.
push the ball back. And I mean that looked like it was going to be a goal for Spain. I think probably right around the 10th, maybe between the 10th and 15th minute.
Yeah.
But she came up huge. She kept fighting it.
I think I would have died, and Becky can attest to this because we were on a call when it happened. If she had gotten the header in the stoppage time when she pulled up on the
Oh.
final corner of the game, I think I would have died. I would have been screaming. My
Yes,
dog would have freaked out.
the last play of the game was a corner for England, and she came all the way up,
She was unmarked.
and she was unmarked too. I mean, would that have not been the most amazing ending to any
Golden
World
ball,
Cup match
Mary
you've ever
Earps.
seen?
Golden gloves, too. Come on.
Yeah, so I
Give me
mean,
all the
just
things.
complete kudos to her for a very well played game. But I mean, the bottom line is Spain just had England's number. The way they
Right?
move the ball is and has been unprecedented. I mean, you don't see any team play the way Spain does.
Was
And
like, even when they moved back to the four back, right? They basically, the entire game, the English midfield was basically silenced by the Spanish press and the Spanish midfield. And right, it forced England to kind of try to play these through balls that they weren't quite, I think, prepared to be like, this is our game. Like, this is, I guess, what we're gonna do. And right, it just didn't look like with the through balls that the defenders and the attackers were on the same page with where it
Sure.
was going. Right. And
The long balls just didn't really work. Often they would just like bounce right to the Spanish keeper and it would be a
Or
turnover
they're taking
immediately.
it so wide that basically you're giving time for the Spanish defense to collect back in the middle, and then your runners are now covered by defenders.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I don't For someone who has been so wonderful tactically, I don't think that this was the best planned game by Serena Wiegman. Spain just was so dominant that England almost seemed unprepared. And at
Yeah.
this point in the tournament, England should not have been this unprepared for Spain playing exactly like you expect Spain to play, right? They're going to be a possession-oriented, fast-moving, quick, tight passes, and England still didn't have much of an answer for it. England just did not seem prepared, and I think that that is even more evident by the fact that they did have to make this big tactical change at the half. They went away from the three back, they took Russo out, so clearly they felt like they had to make some major adjustments, which again just kind of speaks to them not being fully prepared for what Spain had to offer. And this is kind of surprising because Serena Wiegman, their head coach, is an absolute excellent coach. She's won back-to-back Euros. She's made it to the finals for the World Cup twice in a row. But she just, for a coach that is possibly one of the best tactical minds in women's soccer, she just seemed to get it wrong this match. So I'm really interested in your take on how England was prepared for this match, Taylor.
I don't want to say that they were unprepared because I know that a lot of effort goes into this, and it's not like it's not like they didn't have a plan and
Sure.
all of that jazz. But right, I think that looking at the Spanish defense and kind of what worked well against them, it was those long balls past the defenders kind of in a central area and like shooting the gun up the gut. Right. And so looking at kind of what worked well against them and like how those goals were scored in previous games, I would have assumed that that kind of would have played a role in maybe the game plan today. But we didn't really see a lot of that. Even after the tactical change, those long balls, when James came in instead of Russo, basically still were kind of going in wide. And right, I think that if you give Spain the time when you're cutting back towards goal, they're just going to collect and they're really good at defending their box. So I think kind of I was surprised in that way.
I mean, ultimately, considering Spain has really sliced up teams previously, the fact that this was ultimately a 1-0 match does mean that England performed, well enough to keep them from generating more than that. I mean, even with the PK, and I know we've already given Mary Earps lots of kudos as she deserves, but on a whole, is obviously there's huge disappointment in not winning the World Cup final. What does England have to be proud about in this performance?
I mean, it's still their first World Cup final appearance, right? And I think the club has been making strides. I think that had they won, the players probably would have had a little bit extra in their pocket for when they go back home and, right, they put negotiations on pause with the FA on
Yeah.
their bonus situation. Great. I think that they are moving in the right direction. Ideally, who knows with the FA, but right, I think that defensively, for the most part, it was a really solid game. It was just that one mistake, and then
That's
the
all it
barely a
takes.
handball, but it was technically a handball, right? I think you can get angry that the tips of the finger gets called in the box when it looked like the ball fell to the Spanish players' feet better, but right, I think regardless, a 1-0 loss in a World Cup, I mean, anytime you lose a World Cup, it's heartbreaking.
Sure.
But I think they're moving in a good direction, and I'm excited for the Olympics for them.
Yeah, I am too. I think England is a very strong team. I think they should be proud of persevering through this tournament because, I mean, this is a little more of an uneven tournament for them. They were not as wholesale dominant, but they were able to pull it together and be solid enough and do everything it took in order to get to the final and, to put in a performance that they definitely shouldn't be embarrassed about. There's nothing that, they should look at and feel humiliated by. This was a good game. This is an exciting game. It was fun to watch. And, they mostly acquitted themselves well. So I think that's very exciting. But you brought up their battle with the FA. Well, they're not the only team who is having some issues with their federation. So let's dive into some of this controversy regarding Spain and their problems with their coach and their federation. So, for the last year, I believe a little over a year now, Spain has been, quite frankly, in revolt against their coach, Jorge Vilda, and their federation, accusing him of not being, equipped enough for the job, not being a true top selection. He's more of an insider than a truly accomplished coach. So they say, just poor planning and not being treated equally or even remotely as well as the men's team. There have been accusations, justifiable accusations, that they have been infantilized, that after they go out, their bags have to be searched by coaches, and that they're just generally treated subpar to the way a top professional team in the world should be treated. And 15 players, top players, went on revolt and removed themselves from the team. And it seemed maybe like a year and a half ago that this is going to be absolutely catastrophic for Spain. They were not going to be able to pull it together and perform at this level. But obviously, they've proven everybody wrong, despite the fact that there is such strong, clear animosity between them and the coaching staff and the staff. At the end of the match, all the players ran together, all the coaching staff ran together, and maybe with one or two exceptions, there was
Well,
no
I mean, it took some
cross-pollination.
time for the coaches' huddle to break, but like after it broke, some of them did kind of make their way to the player celebration. Some of them did. But like it's still just like it was so like it was on completely separate sides of the pitch
Yeah.
where the coaches' huddle with all of the staff and then all of the players were just completely separate from them.
And in an earlier game, Vilda goes to high five a player who is coming off the pitch, and she just completely like whoop moves away from him and leaves him hanging. And this it's pretty remarkable that Spain was able to pull together player wise and be such a unified group that was able to work together this well and perform and ultimately win this incredible title for the first time for their nation. But now, I mean, you really have to wonder what is going to be the reverberation of this in Spain. Is this going to give the Spanish players more of a platform to bring more awareness to the fact they're having troubles with their federation, that they do not feel like they're being treated equally and fairly? Or is this going to create such an ironclad armor around Vilda that, you know, the federation clearly already sees him as a hero based on their tweets?
They
tweeted out Vilda in with him holding the World Cup, I believe, before they tweeted anything about their own players, which is, you know,
ridiculous.
Shady. And ridiculous. Yeah. So, you know, can we even guess what happens next?
I mean, I would guess that they're going to double down, right? Basically, when the initial stuff came out, they were like, nope, we're not going to be strong-armed into changes. Federation comes first, right? In the end, 8 of the 15 players who sent emails did make themselves available for the World Cup team. 3 eventually did actually make it on the team. Another couple came back and actually had public statements being like, the changes that have been made are not enough. Right. And I think Mapi Leon came out and had a phenomenal statement. And she was just said, basically, I can't go back if the situation doesn't change. There have to be changes. And I'm not saying that they aren't doing it, but I don't see them. And right. It has to be heartbreaking for those players who, right, they're trying to stay honest and true to themselves. So they're like, I can't in all good conscience, like, go back. But like, honestly, I think that the Fed is just going to double down. And it's such a hard situation to watch happen. Right. And I think that part of it comes down to, right, one of the writers on Equalizer is Spanish, and I kind of did an article on it, on the fact that, right, the country was united behind Spain and behind them in this game, but a lot of them didn't know what was going on underneath the surface. And right, I don't think that the Federation will change until it becomes kind of that big thing like we saw in the United States, where, right, the entire public is behind them and it's kind of strong arming the Federation into change. So I think until we see that, I honestly don't think that anything is going to be changing.
Yeah, definitely go back and take a look at that article that Taylor just mentioned, that just came out today by Fernando Ruiz in The Equalizer, that gives a great overview of what this looks like in Spain, what this win and the context around it looks like in Spain. Because, you know, at least in U.S. Twitter circles and a lot of outside of Spain Twitter circles,
we just see the outrage in our simple space. But
yeah, there's the talk of the tournament regarding Spain is the battle between Vilda and the Federation versus the players. So it's very interesting to hear that in Spain itself that is not the case at all. So definitely read some of Fernando's wonderful reporting for more context. But, you know, all change is incremental. The U.S. had such a major sea change on the back of, you know, winning consecutive World Cups. But, you know, even with the battles, maybe I'm too much of an optimist, but even with the battles that Nigeria was waging and is still waging, and the battles that South Africa was and is still waging, I mean, they were able to put in excellent performances that raised their profile on the world stage and in their own countries more than they have in recent years. And so, I mean, the hopes are that with this expanding sport, with the expanding interest in women's soccer that, you know, is growing exponentially every year, that we're getting towards the point where these players will have enough power to strong arm their federations enough into change, or at least have their platforms raised enough that they can start getting more ears so people can start hearing some of the stuff that's going on in the background. But yeah, we will just have to keep our eyes on that situation as it evolves, because I think it's going to be very interesting, for lack of a better term, to see what happens in this ongoing battle between the Spanish players and their federation. So, Taylor, this was a very interesting World Cup, and unlike one that I have ever really seen before in terms of some of the shocks that we've had with, you know, Brazil going out on the group stage, Germany going out on the group stage, a new winner that, you know, has never earned a world title before, you know, going home with the trophy. That's all very exciting stuff. What were your overall feelings about this World Cup?
I wish it would have been an easier time to watch.
Oh yeah, the time zone is
the
a
time
bit.
zones are rough.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was some great football. I think we kind of knew going in, right, opening up the field was going to have some effects. I think it's been great for football, kind of, to open up the field to the 32 teams. Honestly, there are a lot of teams, not just, right, we know that Spain and England are in talks with their feds. We know Canada is. We know, well, let's, should we go through, like, the, there's like Jamaica, I think Nigeria.
Oh yeah,
is
I didn't
out
even
there's
mention
like
Jamaica. My goodness,
so
yeah, of
many
course.
teams are trying to fight for equality and better conditions, and even with all of the stuff that they're definitely having to deal with off of the pitch, they all played phenomenally on the pitch. And right, it just makes me so excited for the future, because imagine what it could be like if everyone got properly funded and right had all of these things, right, we're taking planes instead of buses, had proper people to take care of them post game and all of that. And right, I think that the 2027 World Cup is going to be even crazier, right? We talked about like how many teams, right, who would have expected the round of 16 that we got?
Yep.
I don't think anyone would have. And right, I think that across the world, the parity is going to continue to get better, and it makes me just so excited to watch it.
Oh, me too. I think that, you know, I've watched at least some of almost every World Cup since 1999, everything that was at least broadcast, but really, truly, closely watched 2011, 15, 19, and this round. And this is the best group stage I've ever seen by far. This was the most exciting, edge of your seat, like, you don't even know what's going to happen group stage. And of course, as an American fan who's been a longtime US fan, sure, it was disappointing in that regard, but it was so exciting in literally every other regard. You know, seeing Jamaica, seeing Morocco, seeing Nigeria and South Africa, and all these teams do so well and unexpectedly well. And, you know, as heartbroken as I was for Brazil in particular, because I'm a big fan of their players, you know, it was just so exciting to see the field expand and not have these teams just absolutely run over, you know, not have them be easy steppy stones.
It's like
the Philippines
we didn't have any 10-0 games.
Yeah,
I think the worst one was 6.
Exactly. And the Philippines were debutantes and won a game. Like, I mean, a lot of debutantes won and or at least did well, you know, got results. And that is just so exciting. And that is such a sign of health for this sport as a whole, that, like you say, you know, 4 years from now, it's going to be even better. It's going to be even more exciting. And wow, we have so much to look forward to. Taylor, it has been wonderful chatting with you. This has been really fun reading all your coverage of the World Cup. You've done a great job recapping so much of the action on Equalizer, along with a bunch of our other writers. Just really phenomenal job. For Equalizer, I'm Becky Morgan. We'd like to give special thanks to our producer, Jacqueline Purdy. Even though the World Cup's over, doesn't mean there's not going to be lots of exciting women's soccer for us to cover with the NWSL coming back. So subscribe, stay tuned to the Equalizer podcast, and we will be back with more soon.